This is Crime Binge.
Welcome to Crime Binge,
the podcast.
I am Morgan.
And I'm Sarah.
And this week, we are actually on episode 70, where we are covering Tara Calico.
Yeah, we made a mistake last week. We thought last week was 70. That was my bad, actually.
I tried to, like, go in and add, me saying, hey, guys, like, it's actually episode 69, LOL. And my voice just sounded so husky and like I was a sex phone operator because I remembered to record it at like 10 p.m. Then I was like, we'll just mention it next week.
That's okay.
Yeah, it happens.
So yeah, we are covering Tara Calico this week. And she went missing in 1988. And since then, her case has remained unsolved. Is it due to lack of evidence or a cover-up? Right? Because, like, this case has a lot of twists and turns, and it becomes a little convoluted at times.
Yeah, we tried to get the timeline in as linear of a fashion as humanly possible, but it is a case that, like, just stuff is constantly coming up randomly, basically. Yeah. Like, it's always getting little leads, so It's kind of hard to narrow it all down.
It's not always as easy as you think.
Yeah, so we did our best, and I hope you guys enjoy this. I don't know why I'm doing this at the beginning. Anyway, what are you binging this week, Sarah?
So this week,
yeah,
I'm binging Brad Mondo videos.
Nice. Very nice.
For people who do not know,
yeah,
he's a hairdresser to the stars. And he does a bunch of videos, like, reacting to other people's shitty at-home hair jobs, hair dye jobs and stuff. And he also does, like, informational videos and stuff like that. But he's really funny, and he's just really interesting to watch. And when I was trying to, like, find little facts about him and stuff, I learned that he's 3 days older than me.
Nice.
Born on the same year.
Really?
Yeah.
He's only 26?
Yeah, and I'm like, wow, why are you so successful and I'm literally a piece of shit?
Jesus Christ. He just gave me, like, at least 30 vibes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I did learn that his brother that he's does in his videos a lot is not his twin, even though they look exactly alike.
Yeah, they do. It's very uncomfy.
But yeah, he's fun to watch and just, like, waste a fucking evening with because it's funny, and also with watching him and you dyeing your hair makes me want to do something crazy with my hair.
Yeah,
so stay tuned.
When I cut my hair, I used his hair cutting video.
Nice.
Yeah, and it actually came out pretty decent, so
yeah, like, he does stuff besides just reacts,
so he's a pretty good resource if you want, like, resources and then also funny shit.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and, like, him in general, great attitude, great, like, comedy from him.
Even when he's being mean to you, he's, like, still being nice, you know?
Exactly,
which is what you want. Kind of like Hiram. He's like the hair version of Hiram.
Yeah Alrighty, fam, what are you binging this week?
Okay, this has been my binge for, like, most of quarantine, and I haven't really talked about it that much yet.
Okay.
But my binge is gonna be plants.
You're right. It
plants,
has,
period.
It has been for the majority of quarantine.
So yeah, I got super into houseplants over quarantine, and now I have, like, 30 or so houseplants by myself, and then my roommate also has around that many or a little bit more, so in total there's like 60 to 75 plants, and it might be too much now, but it's very nice to just constantly be surrounded by greenery.
So are all of your plants in your room, or are they in a common area?
Yeah, we have them, like, kind of spread throughout the house.
Okay.
I've got some plants in my room, but they have, like, a nice back patio area. Mm-hmm. So we've basically turned it into a jungle.
Nice.
Like, the entire front of their screen area is just, like, lined in plants. And my snake plant, which was Yeah.
The fuck is that?
It's a cool plant. Got lots of different variegations and all that, but it was something that a friend gave me. They propagated it, which means like you take off a piece and you let it sprout roots and then you plant it and you grow it from there, basically. Mm-hmm. And I think she gave it to me in like May, and it's just now sprouting another baby snake, and I've been waiting so long for this moment. So I'm just super stoked about my plants, basically.
When my family dog passed away, I did something for my mom where I took the dog's dish and I planted like succulents and cactus in there.
Yeah.
And my cactus was like 4 inches high.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of itself growing, another little cactus grew on top of it. And that one is like 3 inches now. And now there's a third tiny cactus growing on top of that one.
Yeah.
And that's like just millimeters high, but it's just a snowman of cactus now.
That's adorable.
And it's great. Yeah. I didn't know plants did that.
Yeah. If you put it in a deeper dish, it might grow a different way too. Like Ooh. Sometimes plants just grow based on their environment.
My mind is blown.
Yeah. But plants.
Plants.
I also am a member of several like plant Facebook groups.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically all I use my Facebook for now. And like people on Facebook are so toxic, even in plant groups. Like
yeah.
chill and just go fucking look at your plants, guys, instead of being mean to each other on the internet.
So is your snake plant your favorite plant, or do you have a favorite?
I don't know. I really, really like my tricolor Hoya because she's green and white and pink.
Okay.
So she's super pretty. I mostly have just been screaming at my snake plant to do something for months on end, and it finally did. And this is like teaching me patience because I don't have any patience. So like plants, you kind of have to be patient in order for them to do anything, because it's like an actual living thing. So
yeah, I planted some stuff out on my porch.
Yeah.
And my, what is it? It's green onion. My green onion has died besides one tiny little sprout.
Yeah.
My basil plant got totally eaten by something besides one tiny little sprout. But my tomato plant is just like, it just
Doing
keeps growing.
Yeah.
But there's no flowers, no tomatoes, no nothing. It just keeps growing. And I'm like, okay, whatever.
It'll probably have to, like, go through a cycle or something. I don't know. I don't know much about vegetables, but, yeah, that's fun.
Plants.
That's our segment, plants. but I guess we should just get into the case. Oh, I mean, last week we were, like, considering if the world was going to end or not.
It
and
hasn't.
We're here, guys, so look at us go. I don't know about you, but I, when Kamala was giving her speech, because I was watching them, when she, like, turned to face directly at the camera and said the thing about, like, little girls, I just turned to my roommate and was like, can you imagine being a little girl and seeing her say that to you? It was just very wholesome. A wholesome moment, you know?
Yeah, I watched them the next morning.
Yeah.
And I was literally laying in bed, sobbing, trying not to, like, wake up my fiancé from sobbing.
It was, like, a really special speech.
Yeah.
And
history has been made.
Yeah. Whether you like it or not, you know, history has been made.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something you can't deny.
Exactly.
It's fucking cool. A female vice president. Like, okay, growing up, you and I were always told, like, we can be the first female president, you know? And, like, it's 2020 and it's just now happening and she's our vice president. All right, that was it pretty much. Since we left in such an uneasy state last week, but I'm glad that no civil war has broken out amongst us.
All right. Are you ready for Tara Calico?
I am.
So, Tara Leigh Calico was born on February 28th, 1969. In 1988, she lived with her mother, Patty, her stepdad, John Dole, and her three siblings. One was a sister, and the two others were step-siblings. They lived as a family in Belen, New Mexico, which is described as a small suburban area and is considered to be safe. Tara was a sophomore at the University of New Mexico, Valencia, and she was studying psychology in some capacity as she was an undergrad.
Yeah.
Like, it's unclear if she was studying general psychology or to be a psychiatrist or whatever.
Yeah. She was still young, you know?
I mean, undecided. That's what I did.
Yeah.
But she always got good grades, did well in school. She was working part-time as a bank teller, and she had a boyfriend who was her high school sweetheart.
Name not locatable easily.
Yeah. Her family described her as a great girl who was smart and responsible, who never really got into trouble, and was also very active. She was a runner and a bike rider. In fact, she would go on, like, 34 to 38 mile bike rides every morning that would typically take her about like 2 hours.
Yeah, and this is like every source lists a different mileage and a different amount of time that it took her to do this ride because the internet takes stories and makes them unusable sometimes.
Yeah, so yeah. Well, on average a 36 mile bike ride.
That's a good way.
So she would usually go on her bike rides earlier in the morning at around 7 to 8 a.m., which is understandable. It's New Mexico, and it gets hot there.
Like, yeah.
I would definitely want to go in the morning.
And that's going to be a longer bike ride anyway, you know? So get out there before the heat.
Exactly. And she would go on her route, which was along New Mexico State Road 47. She went on the same route every day, and was usually accompanied by her mother, Patty, so they both knew the route well.
Yeah.
But recently, Patty felt that they had been followed by a motorist and kind of felt too uncomfortable to go on the ride with Tara. She encouraged her daughter to carry Mace with her, but Tara said it'd be fine.
On Tuesday, September 20th, 1988, 19-year-old Tara left her home to go on her bike ride. She was wearing a white t-shirt that said First National Bank of Belen, white shorts with green stripes, white ankle socks, and white and turquoise Avia tennis shoes. Which
yeah. I was like, wow, the first time I've heard of Avia since Richard Ramirez.
Exactly. So it must have just been like a shoe of the time period that exactly. We're ignorant to. So you guys can yell at us internally for that. She was also wearing a gold butterfly ring with a diamond insert, a gold amethyst ring, and smaller gold hoop earrings. On her way out, Tara jokingly said to her mother to come looking for her along the bike route if she was not home by noon, as she was supposed to meet her boyfriend at 12:30 to play tennis. This was supposedly, like, said in a joking manner, though, as she would have plenty of time to get home. But it is spooky nonetheless.
Yes,
that she
it is.
Said it. Tara also had her college classes later that afternoon at 4 p.m., so she would want to go, like, be home before then as well. She hopped on Patty's pink Huffy mountain bike because her bike was broken, with her Walkman listening to the band Boston around 9:30 a.m.
So she's going out a little bit later than normal, but
yeah, she got a late start to the day. By noon, Patty started to feel uneasy as she wasn't back yet, so she did go out along the route, but was unable to find her. And she drove back to the house in the hopes that Tara would be there. Once she got there, though, and Tara wasn't home, she realized that she had missed a call from Tara's boyfriend, and he was asking where she was for their tennis game. Patty told him that she wasn't sure where Tara was, so he came over and helped Patty and her stepdad look for her.
And remember, this is a time without cell phones.
Yeah, for sure. And this is, like, also happening within, like, 3 hours of it, because Patty was like, nah, my daughter is responsible. Where is she?
Exactly. She wasn't running away. She had plans later.
Yeah, exactly. So Patty did make a call to the police, but at first they would not take it seriously, as Tara had been gone for only a few hours at this point, and they were like, oh, wait a little while longer before you make a missing person report.
As they always do.
Yeah, which, just to notate, is not a real thing. You do not have to wait a certain amount of time to make a missing persons report, so make the report. Or call someone else and make the report there.
Yep, call the county.
Yeah. So at first, the three people, like, stuck together to look for her. But after about an hour of doing so, they split up to cover more ground and to talk to more people. While Patty was out searching, she came across some construction workers. And she asked them if they had seen a girl on a pink bike ride by. But they said they were on lunch for the past hour, so they didn't see her, and they may have just missed her. She also came across three men in a campsite, standing in front of an old Ford truck with a camper on the back. She asked them if they had seen her daughter, and they said that they hadn't. Patty got a bad feeling from these men and felt that they were acting really defensive when she had asked just, like, a pretty simple question. Because of this bad feeling, she went back to her husband and Tara's boyfriend and asked them to go back to talk to the men. This time, they were even more defensive, and the stepdad asked if he could look inside the camper, but the men told him to leave, and he did not look inside the camper. By the time the family got back to the house, it was around 4:30, and there was still no sign of Tara, so they reached back out to the Valencia County Sheriff Department to make a missing persons report.
The next morning, Tara still doesn't come home. So Patty goes back out along the bike path, and this time she drives, like, really slowly. As she's driving, she sees something on the side of the road and decides to pull over. Once she gets out, she sees that is the Boston Walkman tape that her daughter Tara had been listening to. She took this to the police to have them do some further searching. Farther down the road, there was a turnoff point, and here the police found a broken Walkman, headphones, and a bike reflector. Because these items were found apart from one another, Patty believes that this was Tara, like, trying to leave clues behind, maybe saying, like, she was going this way or yeah. Whatever.
And some people just think that, like,
that's how it happened.
It just happened that way, and that her mom's looking into it too much, because it would be hard to, like, break off a bike reflector and stuff like that. But who knows?
So they also spotted what looked to be, like, dragging marks on the side of the road. And they assumed that this was the bike being dragged on and off the road. But the bike itself was nowhere to be found. The police investigation began almost immediately after finding all this stuff, because it showed a clear sign of struggle. For weeks, the area was searched by local and state police, along with hundreds of volunteers. They did these searches on foot, horseback, four-wheelers, and even planes.
Yeah, like, they were out here looking for her.
No one actually saw the abduction occur. But people did come forward with sightings saying that they saw her on her usual path. Multiple people said that they saw Tara riding back towards her home around 11:45 a.m. and that there was an older model pickup truck trailing behind her. And it was believed that it was the truck that was pulling a shell camper, potentially a 1953 Ford.
Yeah. Can you imagine, like, if those were the men that they were talking just directly to the murderers, mm-hmm. like, maybe right after they had killed her daughter or not even killed her yet?
Yeah, because, like, she went out 45 minutes after the last sighting.
Yeah.
This was the only information that the police gathered on the case for 9 months, and Tara had disappeared without a trace.
Yeah.
And for some reason, the boyfriend was never considered a suspect, according to the information that we found.
And I personally find this really strange, like, especially considering later as we hear about the boyfriend later. But, like, the family is always looked at first, and I'm pretty sure her stepdad was looked at pretty considerably, but mm-hmm. the boyfriend never was. And because I am, like, always reading true crime, I'm like, well, what if he set up the 12:30 thing specifically so he could call and say, like, where is Tara? Because he knew she went out on her call and, like, all of this stuff. That, you know what I mean?
That's smart.
So I'm just like, I feel like we should have looked at the boyfriend.
Yeah, like a lot more.
Yeah, but who knows? So the case was pretty much cold until it got a new lead on June 15th, 1989, which was almost a year later. And this is such a strange turn, personally.
It's like unbelievable.
Yeah. I think this is where the case is like most famous, too, because if you haven't heard of the case, you've probably at least seen the photo associated with the case.
Yeah,
because
I feel like if you haven't heard of this one, you've heard about the little boy.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So, in Port St. Joe, Florida, a woman saw a strange van in a convenience store parking lot. It was a white, windowless Toyota cargo van that was just parked there while she went in, but she, like, made note of it. Because creepy white vans with no windows are creepy white vans with no windows.
Exactly.
She said the man driving the van appeared to be in his 30s, and he had a mustache. When she came out, the van was gone, but in the parking spot was a Polaroid photo instead. In this photo is an image of a teenage girl and a younger boy around the age of 10 with tape over their mouths, and they appear to be inside of a van. Their hands are behind their backs to indicate they are bound, but it is unsure if they are. And this woman called police immediately because she was like, what the fuck? And police set up a roadblock in the area as the community only had a population of 10,000 people. But this man was never identified and neither was his van. So and he just like disappeared.
Yeah, it's like, did you accidentally drop the photo? Did you mean to drop the photo? Like, there's so many questions.
Yeah, and like, was the photo taken there or was the photo taken somewhere else if it was there?
Were those kids inside that van? Like,
yeah, there's a lot of questions surrounding this photograph. And it was aired on the show A Current Affair in 1989. And after this episode aired, friends of the family called Patty and told her that they thought the girl in the photo resembled Tara, which would be like really hopeful and nice.
Yeah.
When Patty saw it, she agreed and also thought it was her daughter. But relatives of Michael Henley, who was 9 years old when he disappeared, saw this episode as well and thought that the boy in the photo was Michael. He had also been missing from New Mexico since April 1988, and he had gone missing while turkey hunting with his father and uncle. So when they had two people from New Mexico, they were like, we found like the people in this photo. Yeah. We know exactly who they are. But unfortunately, this is now considered to be highly unlikely that Michael was in the photo, as his remains were eventually discovered in June of 1990 in the Zuni Mountains, only about 7 miles from where he vanished. And it seems like he just wandered off from his dad while he was putting up the tent and died of exposure.
Mm-hmm.
Patty, on the other hand, believed that the girl in the photo was her daughter and said that the scar on the unidentified woman's leg was identical to one that Tara had gotten in a car accident. Also present in the photo was a paperback copy of V.C. Andrews' My Sweet Audrina next to the girl. And this was Tara's favorite book and author, and she is also the author of Flowers in the Attic, which is like the most well-known book of hers, in my opinion. That's the one I always think of when I hear B.C. Andrews. But this, the photo, like having the book and everything, is another thing that's often criticized because they were like, it's her favorite book, but also was a really popular author at the time. And it was like every teenage girl's favorite author. So it would be... There's just to play devil's advocate, I'm going to throw that in there.
So the photo was analyzed by three different agencies in order to attempt to identify the children. The Scotland Yard from the UK concluded that the woman was, in fact, Tara.
Mm-hmm.
A second look by the Los Alamos National Laboratory disagreed, said it wasn't her. And finally, the FBI looked at it, and the FBI's analysts stated that the photo was inconclusive. Mm-hmm. So they've got yes, no, maybe.
Yeah.
The photo, still to this day, has puzzled online sleuths. Some argue that it has to be Tara, while others think that it could be simply a prank. Mm-hmm. The reasoning behind this varies from the way it was left behind, the facial expressions, and the body language of the children within it, and the fact that no missing person has ever positively been identified in the photo.
Yeah.
I also read somewhere that people said that if the duct tape that was across their mouths had been there for, like, a long amount of time, you would have seen redness around their mouths, and there was not that present. That wasn't there. Yeah.
It was, like, it almost looked like it was put on, like, for the photo. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people argue that the way that, like, their shoulders are posed is that they're not tense enough to be actually physically tied behind their back. There's, like, a lot of just weird things about the photo, and people take weird photos all the time.
Yeah.
You know, like, it could have been that person was just fucking with people, you know?
I mean, it could have been like a pedophilic fetish as well. Yeah,
that's true. That too is what I was trying to say, because like the Grim Sleeper, for example, they've identified a lot of women from his photos, and I feel like with one as famous as this being out for 30 years, that we would have more of a concrete answer on who the people are in the image, personally.
Yeah.
But it's a very strange photo, nonetheless, that brings up a lot of questions.
Yeah. And it's obviously, it's very strange, like you said, that 30 years later, no one else has identified the boy or girl in this image.
Yeah. Like, no one else has said any other girl than Tara, and no one has said any other boy than, like, Michael Henley. That's been reported, which is so strange.
So, two additional photos have surfaced throughout the years that could also be of Tara. One was found in Montecito, California, and this is a blurry photo of a girl's face with tape covering her mouth and light blue stripped fabric that was behind her that was similar to the one in the van photo.
Yeah.
The second one shows a woman loosely bound in gauze with her eyes covered in more gauze with large black rimmed glasses. And this image was taken on a Polaroid, but it wasn't shown to her family until 1989. Patty believed that the first one was an image of her daughter, but believes that the second one could possibly have been a prank. Her sister, on the other hand, thinks differently, saying, "They had a striking, uncalming resemblance. As for me, I will not rule them out. But keep in mind, our family had to identify many other photographs, and all but those three were ruled out."
Even with all of these photos out, there weren't any real leads on the case. Patty and John never gave up on the search for their daughter, and they were like the driving force behind this case, even getting deputized so they could conduct their own searches.
That is like the coolest fucking thing.
It really is. Patty worked with the National Center for Missing Adults and appeared on several television shows to raise awareness of her daughter's disappearance. Unfortunately, Patty passed away in 2006, and before her death, she suffered several strokes and would spend the day staring out of her retirement window, waiting for Tara to ride by on a bike, which is very fucking sad.
It is.
John said, "I'd have to try to explain to her that it wasn't Tara, that it was a person too old or too young. Patty was looking for Tara right to the end.
It was her life's purpose."
Yeah. With her passing, it seemed like the search for Tara would be over. But Michelle Dole, Tara's younger sister, took up where their mom left off. In 2008, Rene Rivera, a Valencia County sheriff's officer, claimed that he knew what happened to Tara in the Valencia County News Bulletin. He says that he learned of two men, likely teenagers, who were driving behind Tara and accidentally hit the bike. Then they panicked and drove off with her and eventually killed her. He says that there were two additional men who were involved after the murder and have knowledge of the location of Tara's body. We do have a case put together, but we want to make sure that this case is a concrete case to where we'll be able to effectively do our jobs. We're just waiting to get a little more evidence, her bicycle, her clothing, or Tara herself. And this move has largely been criticized by the media, but also Tara's family, especially John. They felt that it was irresponsible of the sheriff to comment on the matter without any additional evidence or a plan in place to make an arrest.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah, I would be annoyed too.
Yeah, it's one thing to just, like, tell the family.
Yeah.
It's another thing to make it public.
Exactly. And Rivera never publicly named any suspects, and to this day, no one has been arrested from, like, what he said was going to happen for her disappearance.
So later, in December of 2008, another key player to the investigation stepped onto the scene, Melinda Esquivel. Melinda had gone to school with Tara and always liked her, so this case stuck with her. She had moved away to LA since high school and started working in the entertainment industry. She came home to visit friends and family for Christmas when she accidentally uncovered new information into the case. One evening, she was having dinner with old friends when Tara's case came up. She wondered out loud whatever happened to their old friend when someone responded, "Oh, Melinda, the whole town knows who did it."
My heart would sink into my butt if someone said that.
She was informed that the murder was part of a police cover-up, a pretty big one, in fact. It was then that she realized she had to help in some way, so Melinda reached out to Michelle, Tara's sister, and asked if she could bring this to a larger audience. So they began working on a documentary and a podcast called Vanished, the Tara Calico Investigation. They also launched a website and a Facebook page that has around 7,000 followers. These two women are very realistic in their endeavors, knowing that investigators are not likely to do anything without a body, but they're determined to bring Tara home for at least a proper burial.
Yeah.
In the 10 years since she has aided in this investigation, Melinda has received threats and feels like she's being targeted.
Yeah, because all of the information she got obviously is, like, circumstantial from the people in town. But she's like, the deeper I looked into it, people were upset I was doing so. So in 2009, the case gets yet another revival. And this time, it occurred in the form of more photos. About 20 years after the Polaroid photo was found, pictures of a boy were sent into Port St. Joe Police Chief David Barnes. Two letters were received, postmarked on June 10th and August 10th, 2009, from Albuquerque, New Mexico. One letter had a photo printed on copy paper of a young boy with sandy-colored hair. In the image, someone had drawn a black band in ink over the boy's mouth, similarly to the photo that was found in 1989. The second letter had an original picture of the same boy rather than just, like, a printer paper, so it was, like, printed on, you know, real nice paper. 2 days later, on August 12th, the Star newspaper in Port St. Joe got a third letter. And this letter was also sent from Albuquerque on August 10th of the same image of a boy with black marker drawn over his mouth. The boy has never been confirmed to be the same as the original image, and none of the letters contained a return address or a note indicating the child's identity. But for some reason, investigators believe that these letters have something to do with Tara's case.
Just because...
the little boy. Yeah. They were sent around the same time that a psychic had called about Tara, saying that she had met a runaway in California who worked in a strip club, and this girl was eventually murdered. She believed that this girl was Tara and that she was buried somewhere in California.
Fucking psychics.
Yeah. Psychics getting everyone's hopes up.
Yeah.
Searches were done, but unfortunately did not lead to any discoveries. The new photos were sent to the FBI in the hopes that fingerprints or possible DNA would be on the images, but no such luck.
In 2013, the case was reopened again.
Yeah.
By local and federal agents in the way of a 6-person task force to work on the cold case. The following information is the lead up to the task force and all found in a police report.
Yeah, it's kind of confusing, so I think the correct officers' names are in there, but it's like 22 pages and it starts at 97 and goes until 2015.
Disgusting.
Yeah, so there's like,
yeah,
all sorts of fucked up shit in there.
So on April 15th, 2010, Officer Jay Blankney was contacted to attend a meeting at 10 a.m. in the New Mexico State Police Investigation Bureau in regards to the Tara Calico case. Here, he was told of Melinda Esquivel, who had made police reports to the Valencia County Sheriff's Office. She felt strongly that since then she has been followed and that she was in danger. She suggested the offices work together, so Lieutenant Cassis contacted Sheriff Rivera in Valencia and broached the subject. They agreed, and Blankenly was assigned to the cold case team. Once the two offices met to discuss, Sheriff Rivera and Captain Captain Dognis informed them that a thorough investigation had been done and they had already identified 3 suspects, mm-hmm. one of which was deceased. They also said that they had information about where her body could be. They searched the area but were unsuccessful in locating her remains.
They were basically like, anytime the other office asked, they were like, we already looked into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Blakeney reached out to DA Ron Lopez, who is the DA in Belen, and asked about opening the case. Lopez says over the years that several agencies have looked into it and looked it over, so he wouldn't reopen it until new evidence was found.
Yeah.
He got a lead later on by Melinda on another location for her remains, but Officer Blakeney was advised to stop doing his own investigation and allow the Valencia Sheriff's Office to do it themselves.
Yeah, and then he was promptly removed from the case. And that happens a lot throughout this.
Eye roll.
Yeah. It's like as soon as someone gets close to uncovering the truth, they're like, no. You go work somewhere else. On October 1st, 2013, Officer Richard Williamson was one of the people assigned to the task force team. Another press briefing was held, and the team was unaware that they were actually about to come into some luck regarding this case because they, like, reopened it with some knowledge of where her body could be, but they didn't have a lot to go on.
Yeah.
On October 26, 2013, Williamson was contacted by Frank Mithola, a former sheriff with Valencia County. He had been dispatched to conduct an interview for Tara's case where Henry Brown was making a deathbed confession.
Ooh.
Mr. Brown stated that around the time of Tara's disappearance, his father owned a rental property because they were all like teens at the time.
Mm-hmm.
His father owned a rental property down the street from their home, and it was a trailer home that was being rented out by a man named Lawrence Romero Jr. At this trailer, they had made a makeshift basement underneath it where they would party and smoke marijuana. So they basically just like dug a hole under the trailer.
Yeah, like creepy.
And Henry said that the usual people who would come over and hang out were Dave Silva and another friend that was tall and had red hair, but he could not recall his name. One night, they were all drinking margaritas and making fajitas, having a great time.
Yeah, sounds like a wonderful night.
Yeah. When Henry noticed what looked to be a body wrapped in a blue tarp, and his good time was instantly fucking ruined. Yeah,
not conspicuous at all.
Yeah. He said that the men then started talking casually about how they had raped and killed Tara, and another boy had joined them, whose name was Leroy Chavez. They were all driving in one of the guys' trucks, and they knew that Jeffa Beta and Tara had broken up and that she drove her bike on that highway. They said that they hit her with the truck and then put her in the back and drove her out to the gravel pits. Here, they all took turns raping and sodomizing her. Lawrence Romero Jr. said she got ballsy and stood up, telling them she would make sure they would all go to jail, which is, like, something that I think is very, like, cool of her, honestly.
Oh, yeah.
Was just like, fuck you. I fucking hate you guys. You're all going to jail. Unfortunately, he went to his car, or to this truck, and grabbed a knife. The two men held her down while Lawrence stabbed her to death. They then drug her body into a bush, but got scared when the searches began, so they moved her body under the trailer in the blue tarp. They told Henry, if he ever told anyone about this, that they would come and get him next, so he just didn't tell anyone.
But I feel like that body had to have started smelling. Like, he would have noticed more than just that, but who knows?
Who knows? It could have been, like, literally the next day type thing, which, I mean, it would still stink, but also it's where teenage boys have dug a basement under a trailer, so
to
it
drink
probably
alcohol,
fucking smelled anyway.
Fucking teenage boys.
Honestly,
the worst.
They're so foul.
Henry also told police that he didn't think Deputy Rene Rivera was innocent in the matter, that he had the boys back in the murder, suggesting a cover-up.
And some people think that he was one of the adults that hid her body, which is why he's like, we know that adults helped and hid her body.
So, at the time, Lawrence Romero Sr. was the sheriff. So, the main suspect, Lawrence Romero Jr.'s father, was a police officer.
Like, the police officer, basically, at the time.
He also revealed that he believed her body was taken to the redheaded man's property and dumped in a pond there. And her bike was taken to the junkyard in Bellin. Officer Mathola didn't know who was in charge of the case at the time, so he contacted Rene Rivera. He was told to bring the report and cassette tape directly to him. Later, when he called to get these reports, he was told there was no record of either item being placed into evidence.
Yeah.
Officer Mathola began looking into the confession further and spoke with someone named Ron Chavez, who said that when Lawrence Romero Jr. died by suicide, he may have left behind a note confessing to Tara's murder, but that it was taken by Detective Rivera and not placed into evidence. So this kid kills himself. Like, I mean, you can kill yourself for a ton of fucking reasons,
it
could have been one.
Very spooky, considering, like, because a bunch of people come forward and one of them says that one of the men specifically said that Tara comes to him every night and says, why did you do this to me? And then, like, the guy killed himself.
That's so spooky.
Yeah. Which, honestly, if haunting is real, that's how you should fucking do it.
Exactly.
Haunt your murderers and make their lives a living hell.
Exactly. Don't haunt innocent people.
Yeah. Haunt assholes.
Yes. So, this, like, confession note was not confirmed, but it is widely believed to be true within the community of Bellin.
Yeah.
And Officer Mathola actually eventually ended up leaving the police force as he was removed from all special teams and assignments and kept getting written up.
Yeah.
Other witnesses also came forward to this officer advising that there was a red and white home with a pond on it, with a pond on it that was suspected to contain her body. They ran into an issue where a man named Donald Dutcher came to give them information on the case, but afterwards called the people whose names were brought up to let them know that the police may be considering them.
Yeah, like, it seems almost like he lied about having information on the case just to see who they were looking at.
In 2019, the FBI announced a reward of up to $20,000 for anyone who could lead to the location of Tara's body or the arrest of those responsible, or if she's still alive.
Yeah.
At this time, there's been no more movement in the case. The suspects involved are all deceased, and without a body, the case won't be closed. Tara will remain as a missing person. This is unfortunate, as it seems clear what actually happened that night, but can't be proven without a body or other evidence.
Mm-hmm. Which is really shitty, because obviously, like, this whole last portion came directly from a police report, mm-hmm. but it is still hearsay from what all of those people said they saw, you know?
Exactly. So, like, and if the police are a part of it, the police report can be totally biased.
Yeah. So, like, it's all allegedly that this is some huge police cover-up. But if it's not, like, where's Tara? The police are
just kind of dumb, then.
Like, I just feel like we didn't look hard enough into her case when it first started if mm-hmm. it wasn't a cover-up. Because, like, I don't know. The boyfriend could have done something if the police didn't know about the boyfriend, you know? It didn't have to be the sheriff's son who did it. Like, it could just be that Jeff guy, if that's even who her boyfriend actually was. Because her mom didn't seem to think they were broken up, and all of the friends kept saying that her and her boyfriend had recently broken up, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's just so many things to this case. It's like, we're never gonna know.
I know. And it's, like, it's so crazy that she was gone. Like, she was last seen within 45 minutes of her mom going out and looking for her.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, nothing was discovered on that first day. Like, the bike was never fucking discovered. But, like, there, you know, I feel like there had to be something there, and there just wasn't. And it's so infuriating.
And, like, that's the other thing. So, like, the bike, how it was never found, but the people who came forward said, like, they just dumped it at the local dump in Belen. Mm-hmm. And with, like, blah, 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 with all of those searches going on, it feels like someone should have found it, regardless of it necessarily being, like, a police officer, because you could just volunteer, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just, like, weird things like that. Like, the bike should have been found if it was in the local dump and shit like that, you know?
Especially, like, you know, this case was all over the news. Like, someone had been like, oh, you know, I saw a pink bike.
Yeah.
Like,
a bright pink Huffy, you're gonna notice that. Yeah. This is just one of those really infuriating cases. And Tara could 100% be alive. We covered JC Dugard last week, and no one really expected her to be alive, you know? So it's totally possible, but it seems unlikely based on the small town gossip that has been surrounding this case. So, yeah. It's a whack one.
Unsolved cases, they just, they're all infuriating.
They are very infuriating. But they're so interesting because mm-hmm. it's always like that. Just like,
there's just one tiny piece missing and you would have the whole freaking puzzle.
Exactly, exactly. But yeah, that was Tara Calico.
Yeah.
We hope that you guys enjoyed this week's episode. If you did, make sure you leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts.
Do it. Also, please check us out on social media. We're at Crime Binge or Crime Binge Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram.
Yeah.
We also have our website, crimebinge.com, where you can leave a submission of your own stories, give us recommendations on what you want to hear, and check out more episode info.
Yeah, and you'll really want to check out the episodes this week because it's such a photo-heavy episode, honestly. Exactly. So check them out because they are wild to see. Mm-hmm. All right, guys, we hope that you liked this week's episode. And
keep on binging.
Bye.
See ya.